Hi, welcome to another Focal Point program today. This is Stephen Thal, and I'll be your host. In the studio today, we have three folks that will be sharing a couple of programs that will be of interest to our listeners. To help us out with that, first will be Carol Jenkins. She's the Director of Services for the Board of Education and Services for the Blind. Welcome, Carol.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
And then we have Charlotta Copenhaver.
I'm Charlotta Copenhaver. Thank you for having me.
And then we have Jonathan
Gansfried. Okay. Nice to be here.
Yep. Welcome. Welcome, all of you. So let's turn it back to Carol to give us a brief introduction, and then we'll have Charlotta or Jonathan go over their program so we can learn about what's going on at BESBE. Carol?
Thank you. So at BESBE, we like to be innovative and think outside the box and change with the times. And so this summer, actually May, June, we're going to be doing two programs that we've never done in Connecticut before for our blind consumers. So the first one is Blind Astronomy, which is for our pre-employment transition service age students. And the other program is our Silver Summit, which is for individuals who are older blind. So I'm going to let Jonathan and Charlotta give more details about their programs.
Okay, I'll go first, Jonathan, if you don't mind.
Don't mind.
So I'm Charlotta Copenhaver, as I said, and I am an educational projects coordinator. I work with the Pre-ETS program, and all the students in our program are between the ages of 16 and 22. And what we do is we focus on helping students to figure out about what they want to do when they after they graduate high school. So we have all different kinds of programs for our students. However, right now, as Carol said, we are taking applications for students who are going to be attending the STEM astronomy program, which is going to happen at UConn this summer during the week of June 23rd through the 28th. That's the basics of it. The students are going to be staying in the dorms, and they're going to be participating in all kinds of different programs during the day that have to do with astronomy, including building a 3D printer. And then in the evenings, they're going to be participating in some enrichment programs that are going to involve things like learning how to navigate ice cream sundae bar and doing a rock climbing wall and getting tours of UConn. So that's the program in a nutshell. And we're hoping to get up to 20 students involved this summer.
Great.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm Jonathan Gansfried. I'm a rehab teacher in the Adult Services Program. It's a program geared towards helping individuals, adults, adjust to changes in vision through training in activities of daily living and mobility. The program that Carol mentioned just a moment ago, the Silver Summit, is a by-invitation training, which will be held at the Marriott Hartford downtown from May 21st to the 23rd. And it's a training geared towards helping people adjust to living a new life with a change in vision. It's going to be run by a company called Silver Savvy. They've done trainings like this in other states. The types of training that will take place run the gamut, you know, so it's things like activities of daily living, technology, recreation. There'll be opportunities to meet other people for networking. There'll be a resource fair, you know, to learn about other organizations that might be of help. It's the first time, as Carol said, that this has been done before. Some of the specifics are still being developed about what will take place. There'll be a registration. And during the registration, people will be asked about their specific interests, and then those interests will be incorporated into the specific types of training that will take place. But the kinds of things that Silver Savvy has done in other states include, I think this is kind of interesting, they've had, say, like an event for food prep. where they may have different stations. And at one station, they might have people making fajitas. And at another station, they might have people making tomato sauce. In the evening, they might have like a game night. They might have a movie night where people learn about audio description. So they watch a movie and they can hear the audio description. So those are some of the kinds of things that they've done in other states. And we look forward to things that are similar to that at our event on May 21st to the 23rd.
So how many days? It's like 3 days?
So it's three. Yeah, exactly. It's 3 days, 2 nights, again, at the Marriott Hartford downtown.
Let's keep them busy during that time and they can learn and maybe get to know each other and continue it after the program.
We would hope. We would hope that it would be a nice opportunity for people to learn the kind of skills that will help them adjust to living with less vision, while also meeting people that they can stay in contact with and gain support from. And even if I might so say, learn additional strategies. Because I think that that's what happens in, if I might say, the community. You know, we call each other when we're not sure how to deal with something. And we learn from, I know that even though I'm a rehab teacher, I am constantly learning from other people. And I think that that's kind of what we hope for our clients, you know, to gain to develop those relationships that will help them be lifelong learners in the field of adjusting.
Shalada, in terms of your program, are parents involved at all?
The parents have to sign consent forms to participate because the first part of this is done through a research project. Parents and guardians are definitely involved in the support of the program, but they aren't attending the program. So the students will be coming. They'll be dropped off by their parent on the Sunday night of the 23rd. And they will be picked up by their parents on Friday. Now, on Friday, we're going to be having an end of the program sort of ceremony luncheon where the parents can come in and they're going to get a good sense of what the students have been doing. They're going to get to see their 3D printers that they're going to build. And we're going to do a little awards ceremony and give certificates out to the students. And the parents will be at that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And if anybody wants to participate in the program, do you have any contact information for them?
So if any student between the ages of 16 and 22 would like to participate in this program, they can contact their VR counselor, which will be either Stacey Ann Lewis or Paula Rivers, or they can contact me that information is put out through their counselors. So their counselors have all my information and everybody should have their counselor's information as well.
Okay, and how about the program you're running, Jonathan?
So yeah, it's similar to what Charlotta was saying, that anyone who's interested should contact their social worker. Speaking realistically, I know that sometimes people are not aware of who their social worker is. So if they're not aware, my thought would be to call the main number, 860-602-4000. Share your name, share, you know, the town that you live in, and we'll be able to direct you to your social worker.
Oh, good.
Yeah, can I, that's the same in our program. If somebody's not aware of who their VR counselor is, they can call the main number at BESBE and find out. 860-602-4000, or they can also ask their TVI, their teacher for the visually impaired, because the TVIs should all know who the counselor is for every student.
So these are two basically brand new creative programs, as you said, Carol.
Yes, they're brand new to Connecticut. I don't know if they're brand new programs, but first time in Connecticut, and we're really excited to have them here to provide new opportunities for our consumers.
Yeah. So do you have any future plans that you're thinking of about other creative programs you're looking at down the road?
Yeah. Steve, I always have plans and ideas. So this is, in my mind, kind of just the beginning. You know, of course, everything's dependent upon funding being available. But I would say in general, the overall goal of BESBE is to keep thinking outside the box. And if we have the opportunity to do programs and innovative things, the goal is to do as much of that as we can.
Now, in terms of both of these programs, do you see any future follow-ups or how people will be connecting?
For follow-ups, at these programs, consumers, I mean, they make lifelong friends. And so they will have those connections. But the programs themselves are sort of like you do the one and that's it. And next year we might have a different program or something else instead. But the consumers will always have those connections and those resources that they gain from each of these events.
Okay. In terms of your program, Charlotta, what are some of the resources that people will gain from it?
So through the astronomy program, they're going to gain an understanding of astronomy because that's our main focus, is to be teaching students about astronomy in a way that they can learn it and understand it. And using the 3D printers is going to be their way of teaching it, but also in a fun way. So that when they go away from this program, they're gonna go home with a really good sense of not only astronomy, but also some science and technology types of careers. So they're gonna get an exposure to STEM careers along with astronomy. Not only that, but they're also gonna meet new friends. Same thing that Carol just said, they're gonna meet lots of new people there. And my experience so far with getting students together is that they get so much out of just meeting each other and getting to know other students throughout the state. And they make friends. They make lifelong friendships when they have experiences like this.
Yeah, because I'm very pleased to hear about both of these programs. I remember several years ago I had interviewed Noreen about astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
This goes before the COVID.
Noreen Grice is the one who's going to be running the program with us. She's part of the grant, and she's an author of a book called You Can Do Astronomy. And she lives here in Connecticut, and she's going to be doing part of the program. Some of the other people are coming from other states who are going to be running the program, but Noreen is actually the one who approached me and talked to me about this program and wanted to get it started here in Connecticut.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's good people.
Yes.
Jonathan, how many people do you expect to be in your program?
Great question. So we're aiming for somewhere between 50 and 70 people. And at least 30 of the attendees can bring what we're calling one extra, you know, like a spouse, a friend. In terms of resources, you know, that people will walk away with, you know, I was thinking about what Carol and Charlotta were saying. I think much of that applies to this event too. You know, we're hoping it'll be a great networking event where people will meet others. There'll be a resource fair. I think I mentioned that before. I wish I could say who we're hoping will attend, but that's still being developed. But we're really hoping that some prominent members of the community or organizations will attend. And so people will make connections with them that will be useful. And of course, they'll learn a lot. You know, I think that people will walk away with a lot of information about ways that they can do things in new ways.
Charlotta, how many people do you think will be attending astronomy?
Well, I have a lot of interest. We have to cap it at 20 students. So we can't take more than 20.
So I'm glad you gave us an update on the two programs, and we hope that, why don't we mention the deadlines when people have to apply for these programs?
So for the astronomy program, right now we are taking names, and I'm hoping that by June 1st we have everybody secured and signed up and all paperwork completed.
Jonathan?
So for us, the deadline would be by May 1st. So, and just a friendly reminder for anyone who's interested, they should contact their social worker, who would then add them to a list that we're compiling of clients who are interested in attending. That list will be passed on to the people who are running the conference. Again, that's Blind Savvy. And then Blind Savvy, as I understand it, will make the official invitation and handle the registration. So in terms of being added to the list, that will be passed on to Blind Savvy, May 1st is the deadline.
Okay, well, I want to thank you all for coming in, Charlotta, Jonathan, and Carol.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, Steve.
This is Stephen Thaw with another segment on Focal Point. Please wear your sunglasses and a hat when you're outside. The sun is getting to be very brighter and stronger. And also to practice an emergency plan at home and plan it as well. Get everybody involved. And as you plan it, you'll know better. And finally, when traveling, make sure you go to places where you know there are two getting out, or egress, as we call them, so you can get out of the building. It may save your life. So again, thank you for allowing us into your home. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Hi, I'm Charlie Wynn, and this is Books on Parade on Chris. Every week at this time, Books on Parade opens the pages of a New York Times bestseller list book. I begin with the information on the book's cover, and then I read as much of the book's contents as I can in the 15 minutes we have to spend together.
Today's book is Year One by Nora Roberts. The Dust Jacket tells us that this is a stunning new novel from the number one New York Times best-selling author. An epic of hope and horror, chaos and magic, and a journey that will unite a desperate group of people to fight the battle of their lives. It began on New Year's Eve. The sickness came on suddenly and spread quickly. The fear spread even faster. And within weeks, everything people counted on began to fail them. The electric grid sputtered. Law and governments collapsed, and more than half of the world's population was decimated. Where there had been order, there was now chaos. And as the power of science and technology receded, magic rose up in its place. Some of it is good, like the witchcraft worked by Lana Bingham, practicing in the loft apartment she shares with her lover, Max. Some of it is unimaginably evil, and it can lurk anywhere, around a corner, in fetid tunnels beneath the river, or in the ones you know and love the most. And as word spreads that neither the immune nor the gifted are safe from the authorities who are patrolling the ravaged streets, and with nothing left to count on but each other, Lana and Max make their way out of a wrecked New York City. At the same time, other travelers are heading west too, into a new frontier. Chuck, a tech genius trying to hack his way through a world gone offline. Arliss, a journalist who's lost her audience but uses pen and paper to record the truth. Fred, her young colleague, possessed of burgeoning abilities and an optimism that seems out of place in this bleak landscape. And Rachel and Jonah, a resourceful doctor and a paramedic who fend off despair with their determination to keep a young mother and three infants in their care alive. In a world of survivors where every stranger encountered could be either a savage or a savior, none of them knows exactly where they're heading or why. But a purpose awaits them that will shape their lives and the lives of all those who remain. The end has come. The beginning comes next. So let's open the pages of Year One by Nora Roberts. Chapter One, Dumfries, Scotland. When Ross McLeod pulled the trigger and brought down the pheasant, he had no way of knowing he'd killed himself and billions of others. On a cold, damp day, the last day of what would be his last year, he hunted with his brother and cousin, walking the crackling, frosted field under skies of washed-out winter blue. He felt healthy and fit. A man of 64 who hit the gym three times a week and had a passion for golf reflected in a handicap of 9. with his twin brother Rob, he'd built and continued to run a successful marketing firm based in New York and London. His wife of 39 years, along with Rob's and their cousin Hugh's wives, stayed back, tucked into the charming old farmhouse. With fires snapping in stone hearths, the kettle always on the boil, the women chose to cook and bake and fuss over the coming New Year's Eve party. They happily passed on, tromping the fields in their wellies. The McLeod farm passed from father to son for more than 200 years, spread for more than 80 hectares. Hugh loved it nearly as much as he did his wife, children, and grandchildren. And from the field they crossed, distant hills rose in the east, and not that far a cry to the west rolled the Irish Sea. The brothers and their families often traveled together. But this annual trip to the farm remained a highlight for all. As boys, they'd often spent a month in the summer on the farm, running across the fields with Hugh and his brother Duncan, dead now from the soldier's life he'd chosen. Russ and Rob, the city boys, had always thrown themselves into the farm chores assigned by their Uncle Jamie and Aunt Bess. They'd learned to fish, to hunt, to feed chickens, and to gather eggs. They'd roamed forests and fields on foot and on horseback, and often on dark nights they'd crept out of the house to hike to the very field they walked now, to hold secret meetings, try to raise the spirits within the little stone circle the locals called Sgiath Solas, Shield of Light. They never succeeded, nor had they ever chased down the haints and furies young boys knew traveled the forest. Though on one midnight adventure, when even the air held its breath, Ross swore he'd felt a dark presence, heard its rustling wings, and even smelled its foul breath. Felt, he would always claim, that breath blow into him. In adolescent panic, he'd stumbled in his rush to flee the circle and scrape the heel of his hand wound on a stone within. A single drop of his blood struck the ground. As grown men, they still laughed and teased over that long-ago night and treasured the memories. And as grown men, they had brought their wives and their children back to the farm on an annual pilgrimage beginning on Boxing Day and ending on the 2nd of January. Their sons and their sons' wives had left only that morning for London, where they would all see in the new year with friends and spend another few days on business. Only Ross's daughter, Katie, who was 7 months along with twins of her own, had stayed back in New York. She planned a welcome home dinner for her parents that was never to be. But on that bracing last day of the year, Ross McLeod felt as fit and joyful as the boy he'd been. He wondered at the quick shiver down his spine, at the crows circling and calling over the stone circle, but even as he shook it away, the cock pheasant, a flurry of color against the pale sky, rose in flight. He lifted his 12-gauge that his uncle had given him for his 16th birthday, followed the bird's flight. It might be that the heel of the hand he'd scraped more than 50 years before stung for an instant, throbbed an instant more, but still he pulled the trigger. And when the shot blasted the air, the crows screamed but didn't scatter. Instead, one broke away as if to snatch the kill. And one of the men laughed as the darting black bird collided with the falling pheasant. The dead bird struck the center of the stone circle, its blood smeared over the frosted ground. Rob clamped a hand on Ross's shoulder, and the three men grinned as one of Hugh's cheerful labs raced off to retrieve the bird. "Hey, did you see that crazy crow?" Shaking his head, Ross laughed again. "He won't be having pheasant for dinner." "But we will," Hugh said. "That's three for each, enough for a feast." And the men gathered their birds, and Rob pulled a selfie stick out of his pocket, always prepared. And so they posed. Three men with cheeks ruddy from the cold, all with eyes a sparkling McLeod blue, before making the pleasant hike back to the farmhouse. Behind them, the bird's blood, as if heated by flame, soaked through the frozen ground and pulsed as the shield thinned and cracked. And they trooped, successful hunters, past fields of winter barley stirring in the light wind, and sheep grazing on a hillock, and one of the cows Hugh kept for fattening and finishing load lazily. And as they walked, Ross, a contented man, thought himself blessed to end the year and start another on the farm with those he loved. Smoke puffed from the chimneys in a sturdy stone house. As they approached, the dogs, their workday done, raced ahead to wrestle and play. The men, knowing the ropes, veered off toward a small shed. Hugh's Millie, a farmer's wife and a farmer's daughter, drew a hard line at cleaning game, so on a bench that Hugh had built for that purpose, they set up to do the job themselves. And they talked idly of the hunt, of the meal to come, as Ross took a pair of sharp shears to cut the wings off the pheasant, and he cleaned it, as his uncle had taught them, cutting close to the body. There were parts that would be used for soap, and those went into a thick plastic bag for the kitchen. Other parts into another bag for disposal. Rob lifted a severed head, making squawking sounds. Despite himself, Ross laughed. Glancing over, he nicked his thumb on a broken bone. He muttered, "Beep," and used his index finger to staunch the trickle of blood. "You know what to watch for that," Hugh said with a tsk. "Yeah, yeah. Blame it on goofball here." And as he peeled back the skin, the bird's blood mixed with his. And once the job was done, they washed the clean birds in icy water pumped from the well, and they carried them into the house through the kitchen. The women were gathered in the big farm kitchen with air rich from the scents of baking and warmth from the fire simmering in the hearth. It all struck Ross as so homey, a perfect tableau. It tugged at his heart. And he laid his birds on the wide kitchen counter, grabbed his wife in a circling hug that made her laugh. The return of the hunters. And she gave him a quick smacking kiss. Hugh's Millie, her curly red mop bundled on top of her head, gave the pile of birds an approving nod. "Enough to roast for our feast and more to serve at the party. How about we do some pheasant and walnut pasties here? You're fond of them, I recall, Robbie." And he grinned, patting the belly that pudged over his belt, and said, "Maybe I need to go out and bag a few more so there'll be some for everyone else." That's all the time I have today to read from Year One by Nora Roberts.
And please remember that the contents of thousands of books are available from your Connecticut State Library for the Blind. I'm Charlie Wynn. So long until next week's edition of Books on Parade.